Thanks. Well, I have to thank the audience for sticking around, being the last talk in a six-day sequence. I'm sure a lot of you are tired. But anyway, today I'm going to talk to you about two software packages, one which I've developed called TopoCV for Topology Checker and Viewer, and one that Ken Stevenson has developed that he talked about earlier in the week. And so we're using these two in conjunction to look at conformal flat mapping of the surface. So just as a quick review, you've seen lots of this, so I won't spend too much time, but the reason why we're interested in creating flat maps of the brain is that the functional processing is mainly on the cortical surface. So people are interested in surface-based analysis methods rather than volumetric-based methods. And this was an idea first proposed probably almost 20 years ago now by David Van Essen. And so a number of tools have been developed in the meantime. And so from Gauss, we know that it's impossible to flatten a surface with intrinsic curvature, such as the brain, without introducing metric or aerial distortions. And this is often classically known as the mapmaker's problem. Sailors have known this for centuries when trying to navigate the Earth, that they couldn't create or do, they didn't want to travel along an area or length-preserving line. So metric-based approaches will always have some sort of distortion. But we know from the 1850s, from the Riemann mapping theorem, that there exists a unique conformal mapping from a simply connected surface to one of three geometries of constant curvature. So when we say the word flattening, we're really meaning mapping to a surface of constant curvature, being the sphere, which has positive curvature 1 everywhere, the plane, which has curvature 0 everywhere, or the hyperbolic plane, which has curvature negative 1 everywhere. And so conformal maps, and so another way of thinking of conformal maps is preserving angles and angle direction. And so the reason why we're interested in those is because they offer a number of mathematical properties, including they're mathematically unique, different geometries are available, and we can create canonical coordinate systems. So what do we really mean by conformal mapping? Well, typically conformal mapping is really a 2D concept. Conformal maps preserve angles and angle direction, where an angle between two curves is defined to be the angle between the tangent lines of the two curves. So as I've shown here. So typically, this is why you've often seen these checkerboard patterns shown on some of the maps you've seen throughout the week, is because they're trying to illustrate that 90-degree angles are preserved everywhere. So now, if you think about it, though, if you have a surface such as the brain that has positive curvature and negative curvature everywhere, how can you possibly flat map this to preserve angles everywhere? Because you've got angles that are more than 360 degrees and less than 360 degrees. So in the discrete setting, what we mean is taking a surface embedded in R3 and preserving angle proportion so that the angle at a vertex in your original surface maps so that it's rescaled so that the total angle sum around that angle is 360 degrees. So for typical cortical surface flattening, where the processing pipeline is we want to extract our region of interest from our MRI volume. Typically for navigation purposes, various lobes and fissures are color-coded for identification purposes. And then we create a triangulated surface using from the MRI volume using your favorite surface creation algorithm. Now, as far as I know, all flattening methods require a surface topologically equivalent to a sphere or a disk. So that means they need to be surface topology corrected. Now, I mean, it actually turns out that with the CirclePack software, you actually can have a surface with positive genus, and I'll explain what that means in a moment. But typically, we're expecting our surfaces to be spheres or disks. So few algorithms, but more are emerging, that are actually available for creating topologically correct cortical surfaces. And the most commonly used algorithms, such as the marching cubes or marching tetrahedra algorithms, will generate surfaces with topological errors. And this is mainly due to the poor spatial resolution of your MRI scans. I'm not saying these algorithms are the best, but they're very easy to implement, and so that's why they're very, very popular. And they do a reasonable job. So we need to correct our cortical surface topology. So a sphere, we have no boundary components, and a disk, we have a single closed boundary component. And often, once you create your topologically correct surface that's equivalent to a sphere, for cortical flattening, what you may want to do is introduce a single closed boundary cut that will act as your map boundary under flattening. So typically, you will introduce that in a region you're not interested in, such as along the corpus callosum on a hemisphere or along the brainstem, say, in the cerebellum. So the software that I'll be demonstrating today is TopoCV, which I call it for a topological checker and viewer. Basically, it developed out of people giving me data that they said was topologically correct, and it wasn't. So for many, many different packages that say their surfaces are topologically correct, they use that word very, very liberally, I found. So that's mainly why this came about. So basically, the software is based on an algorithm using topological invariance and examining the connectivity of the surface as well as a region-growing algorithm. So some concepts from topology. We have an Euler characteristic of a surface is defined to be the number of vertices minus edges plus faces. And then we can define the genus of a surface to be this formula here, which incorporates the Euler characteristic and the number of boundary components. So typically, in a topological sphere, right, you'll have zero boundary components, and your Euler characteristic will be 2, so your genus of a topological sphere will be 0. And so we can use a genus to indicate what the number of handles are in our surface. So now, if a surface is topologically correct, then it is a topological sphere if and only if the Euler characteristic is 2, and it's a topological disk if and only if the Euler characteristic is 1. So you need to make sure you examine the surface connectivity, because it is possible to have an Euler characteristic of 2 and for your surface not to be topologically correct. So if you think of, if you have 2 topological disks, each one has an Euler characteristic of 1. Together, they make an Euler characteristic of 2 if they're in the same sort of file or data that you're dealing with. So typical topological problems, you've heard about some of them, include multiply connected components, non-manifold edges, holes, and handles. And I'll describe some of those in more detail. So now, these are a number of the problems that I've come across. Some of them, or a lot of them, don't occur. Like, they occur infrequently. They don't occur very often. But I have come across them, and so it's important to check for these things. So unused vertices, these are basically just vertices hanging off there in space, not part of a triangle. We can get duplicated data, so duplicated triangles where your faces are listed twice. Non-manifold edges, so each edge of our surface to be topologically correct is required to be an interior edge or a boundary edge. So edges which occur 3 or more times are non-manifold edges. You can think of these like a shark fin sticking up out of your surface. And they often take the form, the geometric form, if you look at them as walls, ridges, or bubbles. So all of these things can be checked and corrected using a region-growing algorithm. Similarly, with multiple connected components, we want every triangle to belong to the main part of the surface. And another issue which has come up very infrequently, but it has come up, is triangle orientation. We require all our triangles to be oriented in the same direction. By convention, I assume orientation is counterclockwise. That's so that your normal to your surface points outwards. And this can be checked and corrected by examining your interior edges. So if you think of these two triangles here in your mesh, so here you have triangle 1, 2, 3, and triangle 2, 4, 3, and the two edges. In one case, it's listed as edge 2, 3, and in the other case, for the other triangle, it's listed as edge 3, 2. So if you don't get that opposite edge listing, then you've got some sort of orientation problem. Another type of problem is a vertex singularity, or a pinched surface. If you imagine taking a balloon and pushing it in from either side and making it touch at a single point, that's a vertex singularity. And so this can be checked using the vertex flower, the neighbors of the vertex, or also Tilak called it the vertex platelet. And so basically you're looking at the neighbors, and so if you have vertex VI, vertex VJ must belong to the flower of VI, and vice versa. If you have vertex VJ, then VI must belong to its flower. And if you don't get that connectivity pattern, then you'll have these vertex problems. Holes, generally we require our surface to contain at most one closed boundary component. In the case of a topological disk, additional boundary components are classified as holes. They can be corrected, checked and corrected by filling in missing regions. And handles or tunnels, that's one of the toughest problems in terms of surface correction. So we know that each handle contributes -2 to the Euler characteristic. And so we can detect the number of handles by looking at the genus, but in order to detect them, though, all other problems must have been corrected first. So now, the way I've taken to fixing handles is, since there are two possible ways to fix handles, cut handles and cap off ends, or fill in the tunnel, unless you have a priori information, you really need to go back and look at your MRI volume as to why this occurred. Now, this was in reference to sort of packages like FreeSurfer and Carrot that only typically generate a few handles in their surface creation process. These other methods that are creating like 700 handles that some people have mentioned, I hadn't really heard of that. So you certainly wouldn't want to do manual looking at and correcting after that. But what this can do, this software can certainly identify the handles and tell you where to look for the problem. So the way I do that is I use a Euler characteristic, a running Euler characteristic, where as we grow, so I use a region growing algorithm where we take each triangle and then grow off all the triangles connected to it and so on and so on. And while you do that, you can plot the Euler characteristic as it changes over time or as your triangles are grown. And you can see here there are these points where the Euler characteristic drops by 2, never to return to its previous value. And at this point is where you've got a handle, and I can pinpoint and identify your handle locations. So this is just an example from a surface. So here you can see you've got a tunnel going through here, and if you were to orient it 90 degrees, you'd be able to look through this end. So in this particular case, I've cut the handle and capped off the ends, but alternatively, you could fill it in. So now I'm going to move on to the circle packing software. So we've now got a topologically correct surface, and so we want to create a conformal map. And so a circle packing is a configuration of circles with a specified pattern of tangencies. And there's a lot of theory, which I'm not going to go into, but if you're interested in it, I can give you some references, or Ken Stevenson, he's really the expert in terms of the theory of circle packing. But anyway, these theorems, the discrete uniformization theorem, the circle packing theorem, and ring lemma combine to guarantee that the circle packing is unique and quasi-conformal. And so if we're given a simply connected triangulated surface, basically what we're doing is at each vertex we have a circle such that the vertex center is the center of the circle in Euclidean geometry. If two vertices form an edge in the triangulation, then their corresponding circles must be tangent to each other. And in the Euclidean setting, we're either going to assign a positive number to each boundary vertex or an angle on the boundary. So this is just a small example. This is a piece of a cortical surface and just rotated 90 degrees, and this is the corresponding circle packing. And so when you connect up the centers of all your circles, you get your triangulation back, so you have a one-to-one mapping that you can go between your 3D surface and your circle packing. So you can see here sort of this group of triangles here that corresponds to this group of circles here. Now, I'm going to explain how the algorithm works just briefly, but the thing to remember is, particularly with circle packing, is we're not starting off with circles in 3D and somehow deforming the circles to be in the plane. What we're doing is we're purely just computing the radii of the circle, so we're not really sitting in 3D to start. So it's an iterative algorithm. It's a really cool, simple idea. So it has all to do all with surface curvature. So we have positive curvature, zero curvature, and negative curvature. So if we have zero curvature, our surface is already flat. We don't have to do anything. Now, if we have positive curvature or cone point, our angle sum at a vertex is less than 360 degrees. And our goal is to try to make that flat, 360. So if you imagine just projecting that bit in the plane, you're going to get a gap between your circles. And what we want to do is we want to close up that gap. So we're going to decrease the radius of the center circle to close the gap and make all the circles tangent to each other. And with negative curvature, we have angle sum greater than 360 degrees, so you have excess angle, so you're going to get overlap. So now in this case, what we want to do is we want to increase the radius of the center circle, spreading everything out to make everything tangent to each other. You do this iteratively, and you will converge to the circle packing. So basically, to do this, all you're doing is you have a system of equations, effectively, of the cosine law, where what you're trying to do is make the sum of the angles around a given vertex 360 degrees. So now at this point, what we've done is we've just computed the radii. So we have some sort of collection of tangent circles, but we haven't yet visualized it because all we have the radii. So as soon as you lay down the first two tangent circles, the location of every circle after that is determined, because once you lay down your first two, because your third circle must be tangent to those first two and you're preserving orientation, there's only one place where it can go. And so once you do that, then the location of every circle is determined, and each circle in the flat map corresponds to a vertex in the original 3D surface. And so this algorithm here that I've described is in the Euclidean plane. It's a similar algorithm in hyperbolic geometry. Interestingly, there is no known spherical algorithm. So basically what we do is we do stereographic projection to the hyperbolic plane, compute the map hyperbolically, and project back up to the sphere. And so our packing only exists once all the radii have been computed. So it's not like these other numerical type methods where you could stop it at some point and visualize your surface halfway through to see how your flattening is going. So just quickly, I'm going to show you some examples of where we're using this. I'll be showing a lot of this data in the demo. So this was some early work that we did that's already a couple years old. This is from the cerebellum. So you can see that we didn't get a good surface reconstruction. We only got sort of the major fissures of the cerebellum. But here you have functional activation from a target interception task. And so these are the maps we get. Here's the Euclidean geometry and the spherical geometry. So the thing with the spherical geometry, the conformal map is unique up to Mobius transformations, so you need to specify 3 points, such as the North Pole, South Pole, and an equator to identify this map and make it unique. In this case, with the Euclidean, what we did here is we cut out the brainstem, where the cerebellum attached the brainstem, and that's what our boundary was under flattening. Hyperbolic maps is a type of geometry that we really like to work in. And so it has yet to sort of find use yet in neuroscience, but I'm hopeful that it will. The neat thing with these maps is that you can do your Mobius transformations very easily. So let me describe a little bit about hyperbolic geometry. Most of you have probably seen this picture before, one like it. It's a picture from Escher, and it's drawn as though it were in hyperbolic geometry. And in this picture, all these bats are the same area hyperbolically. And if you recall from Ken Stevenson's talk, the distance from the center of the map out to the edge of the map in hyperbolic geometry is an infinite distance away. So here, things look very local, like we live in a Euclidean world, so there's not much distortion. But because we're looking at this map with Euclidean eyes, as we travel out to the edge, we have a long, long way to go, and things appear to be getting smaller and smaller, even though they're all really the same size. So that has the effect of, with hyperbolic geometry, things being in focus or with little distortion in the center of the map, lots of distortion out on the edge of the map. So what we can do is we can pick any point in the map and apply a Mobius transformation and move that to the center of the map, like I've done here. And so this now makes this area in focus, and this area has lots of distortion. And you can see the effect that happens on the coordinate lines when you do this. So these types of things start to become very important when you start looking at different subjects. So here are two different cerebelli in their corresponding hyperbolic maps, and these here are just a zoom in, an enlargement of the hyperbolic map region. And just visually, you can very quickly see where there might be regions of activation that are similar between the two subjects. And so with the hyperbolic maps, you need to pick two landmarks, like a center and positive axis, for example. And if you can do that on two maps, you've already got the maps in a very loose registration. I mean, it's not going to be enough ultimately if you want to register multiple landmarks or fissures and that, but it forms a basis of a coordinate system. So this is just a picture from our paper on the CD showing some of the different manipulations you can do with the conformal mapping. So here we have a hemisphere, which we map to the sphere, the hyperbolic plane, and the Euclidean geometry. And what we did was we just extracted the occipital lobe here, mapped that Euclideanly. And you can see that Ken also showed this picture, sort of the similarity in geometries, no matter what our geometry you're working in. And then we can do various manipulations, like map to a rectangle or map to an annulus. So this is just an example showing some of the visualization things. So this is some data I obtained from David Van Essen from the Visible Man Cerebrum. So here was our Euclidean flat map. And so we can then start to do some visualization techniques. So we can add textures based on the 3D information. So to create this type of bump mapping that gives us some texture information on our flat surface. And now, as if you remember, I said we only have our circles in the plane. We don't have them in 3D. So what we can do is we can create a texture map of the location of our circles and map them back to the surface in 3D to see where they actually came from and ended up. And then we can do some fun things like animations. So I'm just looking for my mouse here. There we go. Where you can then start to help do sort of unfoldings. So this is purely a numeric computation because we don't have any intermediate flat maps. We just have our 3D surface and our final flat map. And so this is just doing a pure interpolation between the two. But it certainly gives you a better idea of where things go during the flattening process. And I think all these tools are important to help, you know, the clinicians and neuroscientists sort of understand and become more familiar with the utility of these flat maps. And so just quickly, this is some data from a twin study that I'm collaborating with Michael Miller's group on. They have twins that where some have depression and some don't, and they're interested in the ventral medial prefrontal cortex of the twin data. So we're looking at this region here. So this is the medial surface of the brain. It's been color-coded according to mean curvature. And we're just looking at this particular part of the surface. And so what we can do is extract, sort of using the methods Tilak showed with the planum temporale, to create the 3D surface. We can then flatten it into the Euclidean geometry and then impose coordinate systems on these maps. And then, so one of the things that we can do is we can, if you can pick four points, we can map your the conformal map to a rectangle. This is a conformal invariant or extremal length measurement. And this is being conformal invariant. What that means is that the only way two surfaces can be are conformally equivalent is if this extremal length measurement is the same. So this is sort of a new idea for a shape metric. So what we can do is if we pick four corners on the 3D surface, we can map it to a rectangle and take the aspect ratio, so the length of the rectangle over the height of the rectangle, and come up with this conformal invariant number. And so we're using this in some preliminary work to look at the twin data to see if there's sort of any correlation between the twins and these metrics. And then just finally, what we can do is we can look at larger regions of the cortex. So those previous maps I showed you are just this small patch of the ventral medial prefrontal cortex. But of course, we can look at much larger regions to create maps that make it perhaps easier to navigate on. So there's still lots of work. We want to compare maps between subjects, look at different metrics. The issue, does flat mapping give you any better registration or localization than volumetric methods? So you're talking about aligning different regions, analysis. And then, of course, you have the question of, because of the incompatible spatial resolutions between fMRI and MRI, how do you go about projecting your functional data onto your cortical surfaces once you extract them? So that's an open question. So just to summarize, which I think is probably also a nice summary of the whole week, a neuroscientific research goal is to understand functional processing of the human brain and try to make conclusions regarding individual differences in functional organization. In particular, what I'm interested in is, since the functional processing is mainly on the surface, we're interested in 2D analysis methods rather than volumetric methods, which has led to the idea of brain flat maps. And I'm looking at conformal flat maps because they offer mathematical properties and perhaps these new ideas of shape measures that need to be investigated. So the software that I'll be showing is TopoCV and CirclePack. You can download that from my web pages, and the link is also in the abstract. And as with all these projects, nothing is an individual effort, so I would also like to acknowledge my collaborators, which come from both mathematics, engineering, neuroscience, computer science, psychology, and probably everywhere else in between. Thank you.